Welcome back to The Green Front. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg. Thrilled, absolutely thrilled to have one of my favorite guests, one of my heroes. I'm sure he's one of yours, too. If you are tuned into your environment at all, Bill McDonough, who is the co-author, of course, of Cradle to Cradle and the founder of William McDonough and Partners. I just nagged him as he got off a panel talking about the path to wealth in the developing world. Bill McDonough, of course, the great designer who's been working a lot with China and other countries, always up to some cutting-edge, interesting projects. And thanks for joining me, Bill. On short notice.
It's a pleasure.
Tell us what you're working on most recently. It's hard to keep up. You're always in a different part of the world every time I tune into what you're doing.
Well, right now I'm looking at the issue of how do we transform design generally to something that serves 9 billion people. Because it's not going to be okay to say, you know, we have a population problem, and that means some kid being born in India is perceived as a population problem, because then human rights cease to exist. So we're applying design not just to our clients who can afford almost anything, but to people who have nothing. And it's fascinating as a forcing function how much creativity it brings out.
Forcing function, is that what you said?
Yes.
Yes, well, creativity is the mother of, let's see, invention, something like that. And when we have to, we're going to have to put our heads together and come together. And I don't know, it's hard to imagine a better perfect storm in terms of just what Mother Nature seems to be screaming to us with all the disasters we've had, with the coal mine explosion, with the BP oil kill, with the nuclear reactor near meltdown, tsunami, earthquake, monster quake in Japan. I think we should pay attention. What do you think?
Well, it requires humility, and I think for the people today, we have to understand that we're not that smart, really. It took us 5,000 years to put wheels on our luggage. So, you know, when you think of a tree being able to make oxygen, sequester carbon, fix nitrogen, distill water, provide habitat for hundreds of species, change color of the seasons, create microclimates, and self-replicate, you know, wheels on luggage is not that big an accomplishment. So we're looking at designing buildings now that make oxygen and make food and purify water. We found that we can use for our Haiti project that we're doing as a major initiative within my design framework. We're studying how we could help there, and we're designing a house that can kill cholera. And we have no money, so we said, fine, how do we help with cholera? Which I saw as a child growing up in Hong Kong. It's not a pretty thing. And we can use water bottles. Plastic water bottles are like a transparent pipe, and they can be exposed to ultraviolet rays, just like they do in aquaria, to disinfect water. And then you can hang a bottle out in the sunshine, and in 2 days, all the biota, the cholera viruses, the giardia, the things that give you gastrointestinal nightmares are dead. And so we found we can purify water for free, basically, and one thing after another. You can make houses that grow food. And it's really exciting.
Bill, were you working in Haiti before the earthquake or as a result of that disaster?
Well, I'm not there yet. I've been watching and trying to wait until we can help, and we've been waiting for the political situation to rationalize so that their elections get done and so on. And we're watching a lot of the proposals that are there. And a lot of them concern me because people are coming in with these plastic panels. And we have nothing against plastic. In fact, we think it's actually a critical component of this exercise. But what we're seeing are foam panels, you know, urethane foams and toxic coatings and things like that. I think, you know, just because these people don't have any resources doesn't mean they should be put in places that would have questionable health effects. It would be terrible, disaster upon disaster from my perspective. So we're really looking at it as a healing act, and can we make safe materials and that can be used for millennia by the people of this country as they settle back and we start to make it verdure and celebrate the abundance of sunshine and goodwill and trees and things and restore sanity to the landscape.
Are you encouraged by this gathering, Fortune Magazine, holding a green conference, the fourth annual? I don't know if this is the first time you've presented here, but I saw this as, you know, one more encouraging sign that they were making this an annual event because people, you know, in corporations are attending, learning, hearing the urgency from speakers like yourself.
oh, this has been the best one. I've been to all of them. And I'm delighted. What is wonderful to see is after all these years, everybody's figured out, you know, who knows something and who's able to deliver on promises and execute, and you know, and I'm honored, for example, you know, being a person who designs things down to the parts per million, and worries about cultural issues and job creation for our nation and elsewhere. You know, I'm just so happy to see everybody's getting aligned, and it's becoming common sense, because it is. It is, you know, a huge business opportunity and full of goodwill. And those two things really do combine, because you end up really running the gamut between your values, which might be about loving the world and loving all children of all species for all time, which is ours, and running all the way from there to principled activity and the principles of good activity, economic, social, and ecological. And then our goals, which are very clear. Our goal is a delightfully diverse, safe, healthy, and just world with clean air, soil, water, and power, economically, equitably, ecologically, and elegantly enjoyed. And then we look at strategies to achieve the goal and tactics to start right away. And then we come to the metrics and we find that it measures up. So the numbers work, but the important thing here, people can start from their values and then get to their metrics and show how elegantly they can achieve them and be very profitable. If they start with just metrics, you can only get to goals. You can't get to values because you're just measuring. So it's really wonderful to see people not just saying we're going to reduce our carbon by 20% by 2020. Our goal is zero, because all that does is tell us what you're not going to do. It's like saying you go to the store to buy plutonium-free peanut butter or something. Why am I worrying about what you're not selling me? So we're looking at positive agendas where people are saying we're going toward renewable power, we're going toward this, we're going toward that, and debating whether we want nuclear in the mix and so on and so forth. But it's more about positive definition of the outcomes we seek and simply less bad behavior.
Yes, I remember when I first heard you speak 12 years ago, you talked about the distinction between eco-efficiency and eco-effectiveness. Do you still use those terms?
Yeah.
Beyond that.
Yeah, oh no, I think it's still critical, because, see, the problem with eco-efficiency and just being efficient is, as Peter Drucker points out, efficiency is the job of a manager to leave something behind, you know, for profit by squeezing out all the waste or whatever they want to call it. But the problem is with efficiency is, what if you're doing the wrong thing and you're doing it perfectly? Well, then you're perfectly wrong. So effectiveness is what executives are meant to do. So the manager is meant to be doing something the right way, but that doesn't tell us what they're doing. So if they're a criminal, that's worse. Efficient criminals are worse than inefficient criminals. So the executive's job is to do the right thing first, and then the managers can do it the right way. So we just got to make sure the efficiency comes after the effective decision of the right thing to do.
You mentioned parts per million, and the fact that we're at about 389 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere. How much does that concern you, given 350 is where the experts say we need to be, and we're still going away from that number in the wrong direction?
Yeah, it's quite terrifying, really, because it's not just climate change that we need to care about. It's also the fact that we have 43% of the carbon produced by humans since 1850 in the oceans now. And so that we see the pH dropping in different places from 8.2 to toward 7.9. I think it's at 8.06 now. And if it gets there, that's essentially, you know, on the way to carbonic acid. And we dissolve the coral reefs, and mollusks can't form shells, so we drop out the bottom of the food chain. So this isn't just about getting warmer or stranger weather. This is fundamental. It's our food chain. So the issue is that people keep thinking this is an energy problem, but it's not. It's a material problem. It's carbon. And carbon is good, not a bad. Carbon doesn't know if it's good or bad. Tools are only informed by intention. So if I have a hammer and I hit you with it, it's a weapon. If I build you a house, it's a tool. So my intention informs the tool. It doesn't know if it's good or bad. Carbon doesn't either. Now, carbon belongs in the soil, and it belongs in trees and plants. It belongs in us. If you want to be carbon-free, you can shoot yourself. So, you know, that's what you got to do, blow away, you know. So we need to love carbon, and but it needs to be in the right place with biota and solar income transforming with water and minerals into living things. So that's where carbon belongs. It does not belong in the atmosphere. So we have a material in the wrong place. We have carbon in the atmosphere. That's a mistake. That would be like putting lead in your baby's milk bottle. I mean, it's just the wrong thing to do. It doesn't belong there. It can belong inside a computer that never gets released into the biosphere. Then it's just what we call a technical nutrient, but instead of a neurotoxin. So I think the carbon issue needs to be looked at as we have to reassign an asset, carbon, to its proper place, the soil.
Bill McDonough, as always, thank you for being such an original, creative thinker, problem solver, designer extraordinaire. Thanks for joining us here at the Fortune Green Business Conference at the Ritz-Carlton in Laguna Niguel, just wrapping up this hour. Hope you've enjoyed this edition remotely from the Green Front. I'm Betsy Rosenberg. Have a great green week. See you next time.